news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast.
Out of the Ordinary, the Big Ball Broadcast.
Here comes your host, Kyle A. Barron of the World.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast. This is episode 81. All the geeky news that you can use, whether it's movies, TV, games, tech, random insanity, you're going to find it right here. We are part of the geekmedia.com. My name is Kyle A. Barron. I'm an LA-based video game and anime voice actor.
This is your co-host, Otherworld Steve, and currently, I'm just a musician.
Just a musician? What the?
Yeah, I've got 50,000 other projects in the back burner, but right now my focus is on the music stuff.
Steve here is part of the band called Perimeter of the Void. If you're a longtime listener of our show, then you know that we've actually previewed some tracks on previous episodes, and your first full-length CD is on the verge of coming out.
It is. Today was quite the milestone for the band. After 15 months, you know, it's a year and 3 months of putting this album together, sat down with the invested parties. We went over all the final tracks, everything got signed off on, the final track listing. So, yeah, we actually revamped the album cover, too. So, new album cover, and boom, done. Good to go.
Okay, so we've been hinting that you'll be able to take pre-orders pretty soon. Are we able to do that as of now, as we post this show?
Actually, yeah, as of now, what we're doing is we're running a special through the label, and we're going to have the album up for pre-sale. And if you go ahead and plunk down your change on the pre-sale for the album, you'll be automatically redirected to a URL to download the album in a digital format immediately. And what's really cool about that is that we're including all the cover art and everything and all the lyrics, which the physical CD actually doesn't have in it, but you'll be able to get a document with all the lyrics in it. And we're going to do actually some virtual trading cards through this. If you download the whole album or if you download individual tracks, you'll get the lyric trading cards. It's got an image on the front that reflects the song, and on the back it's got the song lyrics on it, and you can collect them and trade them with your friends.
That is awesome. I don't think any band has ever done trading cards like that.
Nobody ever has, and initially we wanted to actually do physical trading cards with the CDs, and because of time constraints and some financial issues, we decided to go this route instead, but I think it's still kind of cool. You can't have the bubble gum, but, you know, it's got to make some concession somewhere.
You can always provide your own bubble gum as the person pre-ordering and just, like, kind of stick it in there.
Yeah, you don't have to pre-order the album, though. You can just download the digital version if that's what you want, if that's your taste. But not everybody has a portable music player or MP3 device, so if you want the physical album, certainly you'll get that when it ships. But again, you'll be able to download the entire album in digital format, and we're doing this highest quality MP3 possible. We're going 256 on the download.
So that's a nice high bit rate, nice full stereo, good sounding. You know, you crank it up, it's not going to sound like it's underwater or anything.
And you've heard the stuff, certainly, you know, no ego intended whatsoever, but some of the tracks, I don't want to say they're busy, but there's a lot in there. There's a lot of different instruments going on, a lot of melodies and harmonies, so it's something you certainly want to appreciate in its highest quality format.
Especially with headphones. Ah.
We're going to be doing some exclusive tracks for the website, Holophonic Sound. And what holophonic sound is, when you listen to it back on headphones, and that's the only big caveat, you have to listen through headphones, it doesn't work through standard speakers. But when you play it back through headphones, the audio is as if you were really there when it was recorded. It's recorded to emulate the human ears, and it has a really slight fractional delay between ear to ear. And when you're listening, you can also sense direction too, from where the sound's coming from, being from above, below, left or right, behind you or in front of you. So it's a really, really crazy psychedelic experience, and that's something we're going to be doing sometime in the near future. You can go to eberecords.com. That's one word, eberecords.com. And I can click on the shop link or click on the nice little article on there about Perimeter of the Void and pre-ordering the album. And it'll take you over to the shop page. And you should be really happy with what we're offering there.
If you'd like to sample some of the sounds of Perimeter of the Void, those are available for listening on myspace.com/Perimeter of the Void.
And actually, the first song that's up there is the title track for our debut album, which is called Dust.
Hop on that. That's full of awesome.
It's full of awesome. I like that. Well, next album, that.
Let's talk about like an incentive program here. Let's talk about like maybe saving a little money as a listener of the Big Bald Broadcast.
Yeah, what we're going to do, a little cross promotion here between EBE Records and the Big Bald Broadcast, is if you make a donation to the Big Bald Broadcast via the PayPal link, donation link on the the website, which is what again, Kyle?
Bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com.
Thank you. If you make a donation through there, we will send you a promotional code in an email that will allow you to make a free MP3 download from EBE Records. There's more always coming. You can download any track that you desire.
It's good for one free single track in high-quality MP3?
Exactly.
So you can sample stuff on MySpace, but that's an awesome incentive there. So if you've thought about and you're listening to the podcast and you want to toss a few extra bucks our way, and then the band can kind of give back to you and say, all right, here, have a free song.
Right. Not only do you get a cool podcast, but you get cool music to go along with it.
So visit bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. You can also get there through going through my website, which is kylehebert.com. That's H-E-B-E-R-T for the win. And we'll get you up and running. Just click on the PayPal link. Send us any amount. Doesn't matter.
Well, it matters to me.
Okay.
If you want me to stop doing that, it's going to be a lot.
We're going to tackle that issue in a moment when we get into our email segment. But let's talk about what we've got as far as content on this episode of the Big Bald Broadcast. Namco is considering hooking Wii up with arcades. Anime streaming for free, officially subtitled the day it's broadcast in Japan. We're going to tell you what Japanese studio is leading the charge to combat online piracy. We've got scoop on Terminator 4, a special effects guru coming back to the fold, cast info on Batman's anime anthology Gotham Knight, plus a new Street Fighter live action flick, ew, and casting info on the new Friday the 13th remake, double ew. Frank Miller's Ronin coming to the big screen, and the future of the Fantastic Four franchise. In tech, we'll tell you why a new firmware update for the PS3 can make it the best Blu-ray player out there right now. And Best Buy is letting consumers trade in their HD DVD players and movies. We got a quick breakdown of what you can expect to get, aka not much. Plus, in a random category, 10 outrageously awesome film deaths. All this and more on the Big Bald Broadcast.
And here I thought it was going to be a 10-minute episode.
Yeah, I know. Every time. You know, we go, it's been like a month since we had our last show. And I'm going to warn you guys now, it'll probably be another month before we have a show, because I've got 3 convention appearances coming up in April. You can click on kylehebert.com, you know, and click on appearances. Ha ha ha, plug, 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 plug. Yeah, since basically the weekend is the only time we can record the show, we're at a loss. So, we'll give you shows whenever we can. Let's just dive right into the email here. Our email address is thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. First email comes from Carly, who says, I'm just writing to say I love the podcast. I started listening to it about 6 months ago, and I'm still subscribed to it, which for me is pretty amazing. I never really find podcasts that keep my interest, but you guys rock. I always look forward to the next episode. The geeky news always comes in handy. Oh, and I just feel the need to say, who cares if Steve burps into the mic? People burp. That's just how things go. Keep up the good work.
That's awesome.
Pro burp.
You knew it was coming. Come on.
We've got a story submission. This actually happened a while back, but in case you're under a rock and didn't hear, this story submitted by Dai Kun, who says Gary Gygax, who co-created the fantasy game Dungeons & Dragons and helped start the role-playing phenomenon, died on March 4th in his home in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. This coming to us from the Associated Press. He was 69 years old. Now, Gygax had been suffering from health problems for the past several years, including an abdominal aneurysm. Gygax and Dave Arneson developed Dungeons & Dragons way back in 1974 using medieval characters and mythical creatures. The game, known for its oddly shaped dice, became a hit, particularly among teenage boys, and eventually was turned into video games, books, and movies. Despite declining health, Gygax hosted weekly games of Dungeons & Dragons as recently as January. So I can say, as a non-Dungeons & Dragons player, hey, hats off to the man. Rest in peace for starting a phenomenon that definitely turned a lot of people into geeks.
Yeah, the geek that I am, I have to admit that I did play briefly in junior high school.
I played a little bit in college. I had a friend who was into it, and he was the dungeon master, but all of us were way too ADD to stay focused, so we kept on throwing the rules out, and he kept on getting pissed off.
There's some purist out there. That's pretty creepy.
I know. They take things a little too seriously, but now I guess Dungeons & Dragons to the next level is now the whole World of Warcraft thing.
I think I can deal with the people who are totally obsessed over World of Warcraft a lot more than people who LARP.
Any LARPers out there want to chime in and defend that?
Any LARPers out there want to kick Steve's ass? Another sad passing, Arthur C. Clarke died.
Yes, if you don't know that name, you probably know the movie and novel 2001, A Space Odyssey, as well as numerous others.
Guy was a science fiction god, one of the definitely, I guess just like the golden age greats. And speaking of which, Ben Chapman died too.
The original person who wore the costume on Creature of the Black Lagoon, the classic Universal monster flick.
And from both our personal experiences, you really, I don't think, you know, you'd be really hard pressed to find a nicer person on this planet.
A fantastic, fantastic, really, really nice gentleman. We both have his autograph, so rest in peace, Ben Chapman.
Enough with the morbid, let's move on to something really positive, or at the least, geeky.
Yay, geeky. Philip writes, hey, I just started listening to your podcast recently, starting at episode 74, and well, if I'm going to email you guys, I should start by saying, Kyle Hebert, you are one of my favorite voice actors from DBZ and Yu Yu Hakusho only. I don't like the other shows you've been in.
I applaud the honesty, though. That's great.
Awesome. He also says, Steve, I've listened to a few of your band songs. They are definitely unique, and congrats on your kid. But I wanted to email because I know as soon as you said on podcast 76 about the voiceover on Darth Maul and the guy who was on Shaun of the Dead, I remembered and looked up a link, and he gave me an IMDb link. It was Pete, LOL, Funky Pete, played by Peter Serafinowicz, yes, and I looked that over, and his IMDb page says he also voiced Darth Chef on South Park a few years ago. So, Philip, thanks for the info and clarification.
Wow, that's BBB dedication right there.
Our final email comes from our loyal listener, Momo, who says, hey, Kyle and Steve, OMG, just listening to the podcast. I'm loving this. Most of the recent podcast stuff, I find myself listening and hearing my own thoughts being spoken. Dang! Justice League movie, are Batman and Superman both in that or not? Batman anime, dang, gonna see that. Yay, might have to see the Indiana Jones flick just because it sounds amazing. And I still can't wait for the new Batman movie. I've been looking forward to seeing that forever. Woot! Funimation putting in the bid for the Geneon titles to release them so they don't disappear forever? That's a step in the right direction, thank God. Speed Racer. I should probably go see it, even though the moment I hear Speed Racer live action, I can only go, ew, that's just wrong. Well, Momo, yep, Batman and Superman are in the new Justice League, the new animated movie that's available now on DVD and high def called New Frontier. That's adapted from a critically acclaimed miniseries, but I have a feeling Momo is actually referring to the live-action project from Warner Brothers, right? It's in a weird state of flux.
It is, and I believe we did cover this on the last podcast. The movie's going to take place at a time where Batman has been kicked out of the Justice League and Superman is quote-unquote dead after his run-in with Doomsday, so Warner Brothers got very creative to remove those two characters from that particular franchise.
Right, but if you are starred for Justice League action, I can recommend New Frontier. It's rated PG-13, so it's a little darker, a little edgier. And, of course, it's got a whole slab of celebrities in the role. Kyle MacLachlan is voicing Superman. David Boreanaz, who played Angel on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is Hal Jordan. Neil Patrick Harris, yes, Doogie Howser as The Flash. Lucy Lawless is Wonder Woman. Jeremy Sisto is Batman. I've never heard of this gentleman's work before. He's the only voice that didn't quite work for me. Doesn't quite work. However, the story overall is pretty cool. So I recommend checking that out. At least give it a rental. Justice League New Frontier.
Now available on torrents everywhere.
Batman. Batman.
Inside voice. Inside voice.
Let's kick off our show with movie stuff.
Movie stuff that has to do with stuff about movies. Recently, Chris Evans commented to MTV about 20th Century Fox and Marvel Studios leaning more towards a Silver Surfer spinoff movie. And when questioned about the future of the Fantastic franchise, he said, I'm pretty sure we won't do another one. And he also went on to say, it's a closed book. Now, Marvel Studios' Kevin Feige last summer said that a Silver Surfer movie has been moved to the forefront for discussion. The spinoff will cover the origin of the character and will feature Galactus.
Well, that's wacky.
Somebody asked Lawrence Fishburne if he had heard anything about the movie, and he said yes, he was aware that the movie was going into production, but he has not been contacted yet about providing the voice again.
Now, it's kind of odd, you know, Hollywood's obsession with trilogies, why they don't just go ahead and bang out a third, you know? I didn't know how profitable the second Fantastic Four movie was. I saw it. I took my daughter to see it last summer, and I thought it was okay. It's all right. I didn't see the first one, though.
Yeah, it's kind of hard when you release Ass and Ass Part 2. And the studio goes, do we really want Ass Part 3?
Well, there's a lot of ass out there.
Apparently. Most of them happen to be in Hollywood studios.
Hey-o!
In conclusion, the Fantastic Four is no more.
And speaking of ass, does anyone remember or tolerated the 1994 movie Street Fighter? I never did. Did you ever see that one?
It's like my favorite movie ever.
Oh, you lie.
Naturally. I don't think I've ever seen it in its entirety, to be honest with you.
I only know that it's Raul Julia's final film, and what a legacy.
I know with Jean-Claude Van Damme, it's going to be real small doses.
Yeah, yeah. But apparently Hollywood is bringing Street Fighter back to the big screen. We got some casting news here. Neil McDonough, he was most recently the Tin Man in Sci-Fi's Tin Man movie. He was also in Minority Report. If you saw a picture of him, you know, oh yeah, that guy. He's going to be playing M. Bison for the currently in-production Street Fighter movie. And you got a cast here that ranges from someone from Smallville, any Smallville fans out there, as Chun-Li, Kristen Kreuk, Michael Clark Duncan as Balrog, and Taboo from the Black Eyed Peas, Chris Klein from American Pie. I'm not sure what to think about this, if it's just another train wreck in the making.
It makes me want to see the Dragon Ball movie even more.
The date got bumped back. It's no longer coming out in August. They got bumped to April of 2009, I heard.
Oh, no. I'm totally sad.
Boo. Yeah, now they have more time to tweak the steaming pile of poo.
It'll be a polished turd.
Yay!
Ronin, one of the earliest things I remember reading from Frank Miller. Ronin was written and drawn in the early 1980s by Frank Miller, and it centers on a masterless samurai who is reincarnated in a near-future New York populated by squatters, factions, and mutants. And the Ronin must try to destroy a demon with a mystic sword, which is also found in New York. Now, this thing's moving forward pretty quick. You get Sylvian White already attached to direct. Gianni Nerani, one of the producers behind the adaptation of 300, working on it. Seems like it's pretty well wrapped up and coming to a theater near you. Probably sometime next year.
Now, that's crazy, because I was hoping that Sin City 2 would be amped up in production, but I guess that got tossed to the wayside for now.
You know, I'm not sure what happened to that. We've heard a bunch of people that were attached, scripts going around and pre-production and everything, and then, boom, got dropped. Don't know if it's a permanent thing or if it's just way on the back burner.
Yeah, well, something that is definitely coming out this summer to tie into Batman The Dark Knight. It's the big sequel to Batman Begins. Yeah, we've actually got some casting info here. Kevin Conroy is returning to voice Batman on the new anime anthology Gotham Knight. Yay! Executive producer Bruce Timm says, anytime we initiate an animated Batman project, the first question we hear from fans is, will Kevin Conroy voice Batman? And to meet Kevin is to know that he's not anything like Batman, yet he manages to perfectly nail that indefinable element that is Batman. He's got the voice, he's got the acting chops, and he's absolutely the best man for the job, unquote. Now, joining the cast, you've got Gary Dordan from CSI, Anna Ortiz from Ugly Betty, and they're going to be heard in multiple segments of this six-story film as police detectives Crispus Allen and Anna Ramirez, key members of a special unit who learn to trust the Dark Knight's motives. The cast also features popular voice actors Corey Burton, Rob Paulson, Kevin Michael Richardson, Jason Marsden, Scott Menville, you know him as Robin from Teen Titans, Hendon Walsh, who was also on Teen Titans. This movie, Gotham Knight, will be on video and Blu-ray in July.
And yeah, I have to really echo that sentiment. Conroy is definitely the definitive Batman, in my mind anyway. And having Bruce Timm attached, you know, who brought so much to the original animated series, it just makes me that more interested in this project.
Yep. Hopefully, I think in the show notes, I put a link to superherohype.com that had posted a video, a little behind-the-scenes sneak preview of Gotham Knight. It's got some really cool footage and interviews with various comic creators. It's about 10 minutes long or so. It's definitely worth checking out.
If you're a fan, because otherwise it really, really, really drags on.
That's why it's called a sneak preview. It's a tease.
Yawn. Speaking of teases, totally off script here, I'm sure you saw this, the two sneak preview pictures of Snake Eyes in the upcoming G.I. Joe movie.
I did, and I'm drooling. Looks good.
Totally badass. Ray Park as Snake Eyes. Now, the quote that I read that was attached to the pictures was that, you know, they're keeping true to the premise of Snake Eyes with the vow of silence. So that really made me happy. Now, if only they can confirm the second part with him keeping his mask on throughout the movie, then I'll just totally be in fanboy bliss.
Nothing like seeing a picture of a ninja with a sword and a gun.
I think that was a quote from Ain't It Cool, where, you know, they really released that picture intentionally to show you, like, it's going to be badass, because there's nothing like a ninja with a sword and a gun.
Yeah, truly.
He'll slice your head off and then put a bullet in it.
I'd be more fearful of that, other than someone that stands out wearing a bright orange jumpsuit. Ha 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 ha.
From the bowels of hell comes my burps. And a Friday the 13th remake. What?
I like your burps better.
Oh, I think most of our audience will too. And it's really hard for me to read this because, you know, it's hard to stay on mic and shake my head at the same time because I'm so sick of these stupid remakes. But apparently, Jared Padalecki, who stars as paranormal investigator slash cleaner Sam Winchester on TV Supernatural, will be the non-Jason lead in the Friday the 13th remake, which is set to film in Austin. But he's going to play the lead who investigates what happens up at Crystal Lake. Now, it's kind of weird for him to play an investigator, again, because this is the third remake or slash pseudo-remake for this dude, who has also previously appeared in House of Wax and Flight of the Phoenix redos.
But hey, you know, an actor's gotta work.
And apparently they're remaking Nightmare on Elm Street, and they've already confirmed it's sans Robert Englund. So I can't even give you a good reason to show up to see this thing in theaters. You know, if you're gonna remake a movie and modernize it and make it really kick-ass, that's great, but to remake essentially B-movies and to try to modernize them for today's audience, you're still making a B-movie at heart, so you can't expect miracles.
I tell you, a remake that I am shaking my head at is The Day the Earth Stood Still, because, number one, it shouldn't be remade. Number two, it stars Keanu Reeves as the main alien.
Yeah, and who needs a reason number three at that point, right?
Yeah, I'm just going to stop right there. I mean, that Day the Earth Stood Still is one of my favorite all-time sci-fi movies. It's like you just can't touch that greatness. In the 80s and 90s, James Cameron was attached to remake it, and I thought, okay, it has half a chance. But then it lumbered in production hell, and nothing came of it. And now there's people that I have no idea whose credits are trustworthy, and then, you know, they got Keanu Reeves, and they're like, ah.
And it's one of those things where I just really can't envision it, because like you, I also hold that movie in very high regard. But the one thing you have to admit is, I don't want to say it doesn't translate well today, but it is a slower paced movie. So I don't really know what they would do to keep some semblance of the original and kind of modernize it for today's movie audience. I really can't imagine bullet time or exceptional use of CG in a film like this.
To keep today's audiences interested, you have to use that flash cutting.
But again, the movie is relatively slow paced, so I don't know. I don't know how the slow cutting, fast cutting thing would go together.
Yep, it would just be a different animal, and maybe it would make some new fans go, like, wow, this is great. And then they'd watch the original and go, oh, God, the remake's so much better. It's like, it's a generational thing, I guess.
I'm just wondering when Universal's going to jump onto remaking all the classic monster movies, because those haven't been touched in a while.
Well, I did see a picture that was coming in from Entertainment Weekly of Benicio del Toro as the Wolfman. So I think they are starting to greenlight these things.
Ouch. I gotta learn to keep my big trap shut already.
And that Creature of the Black Lagoon actually has been lumbering for the past few years. Don't know. I mean, maybe they'll wait and see how the Wolfman does.
Yeah, you know, that's one news piece there that I haven't seen an update for in a long, long, long time.
Yeah, too bad, too, because I think it would have been great to have good old Ben Chapman, see earlier in the show, to have a cameo.
That would have been pretty badass, because I don't want him doing the cameo now. That'd be too icky.
Yeah, kind of. Well, let's see. We've talked about this fourth Terminator movie over the past few podcasts. Got another update here. If you don't know the name, you know his work. Stan Winston created makeup and special effects for all three Terminator movies, Aliens and Jurassic Park. Now, he even tried his hand in the director's chair in the 90s with Pumpkinhead, if anyone remembers that. But his work in the special effects field is what has cemented his place in film history. Terminator 4, which will be directed by McGee, best known for helming the Charlie's Angels films. We got Christian Bale attached to co-star. Arnold Schwarzenegger is too busy as the Governator to even do a cameo.
There's really not a lot for me to say about that particular franchise at this point in time.
Other than Fox, please renew Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
And that's really unfortunate, because a lot of the feedback that I'm reading online is that if the film parallels or can reach that amount of depth that the TV show does, it has the potential to be a phenomenal film. But I think we kind of already know the answer to that when the director's coming off of Charlie's Angels, you know? The TV show, if you haven't seen it, you've got the opportunities to download it on Xbox Live and stuff, and Again, I'm sure that's on torrents all over the place, and I've heard nothing but amazing things about it.
You got to give it a chance, though. The pilot is okay, and then it really starts to kick in after that, so just keep with it. It's only 9 episodes for the first season, thanks to the writer's strike, but I think it'll hook a lot of people.
I think so. So, on to video game news, and apparently, Namco's considering hooking Wii up with arcades. Namco announced a few weeks back that it would be closing about 60 of its Japanese arcade centers, and it put the blame on a number of factors, including the popularity of Nintendo's Wii. A recent report suggests, however, that the new rival game industry market may be getting cozy before any fighting gets underway. According to the report, Namco is looking into the development of arcade titles which would link up to the Wii, exchanging data between the home and the arcade. Now, sadly, the site didn't elaborate. Data may not be all that's exchanged between the two. Reflecting on the poor performance of arcades in comparison to the strong performance of the Wii, Namco advertising manager Hitoshi Yamagata, that arcades have placed the focus on core gamers while the Wii is something that anyone can play. So what that means for some online Wii titles or whatever remains to be seen. Now, the whole thing about the arcade slash Wii experience, I hope that doesn't mean like actually physically bringing your Wii to the arcade, because it seems kind of cumbersome and elaborate for probably not an incredible gaming experience.
True that. And yeah, I know that arcade attendance has dropped significantly with home consoles through the years. But I mean, as a consumer, You pay the flat fee and you can play the game as much as you want. And if you go into an arcade, you're dropping 75 cents, $1, $1.50 just to play a game that, you know, you may play for the first time and you die in 30 seconds. And then you're dropping money left and right. So I can see why arcade attendance goes down.
Oh, most definitely. Because, you know, there's just so many factors involved with why arcade attendance has gone down. I don't know, if you're anything like me, you get old and you get nostalgic and you end up getting a couple arcade cabinets for your house anyway.
Oh, by the way, Steve has a PS3 now.
Oh, dun dun dun. That's, we should have opened with that, because that's like earth-shattering news. Steve went out and bought a PS3.
But I was going to say that, you know, you can get Dragon's Lair and Space Ace coming soon on Blu-ray.
And, you know, I've really heard nothing but phenomenal things about Dragon's Lair on Blu-ray. Space Ace, you know, certainly a game that doesn't get enough credit. It's not the poor man's Dragon Ball Z. It's not the poor man's it's not the poor man's Dragon's Lair. It's actually a much more involved game. It's a lot more difficult than Dragon's Lair. It actually follows a really cool plot. It's very cinematic, and it's got an incredible score. So, no, I don't work for Digital Leisure, but definitely check it out if you haven't.
Nice. Okay, so I gotta know, PS3, what do you think?
Let me say this. The only game I have right now, unfortunately, is Call of Duty 4. And, yeah, it does look spectacular. But I was more interested in what Blu-ray would look like, because, you know, the format war is over. If this is what we're going to be stuck with for the next, you know, decade, then, you know, I had to figure out what this thing was all about. Now, unfortunately, the only movies I have on Blu-ray are the two Broly movies from Funimation. While the picture is absolutely stunning, it's absolutely spectacular, and using the HDMI and the whole surround sound is really cool. It's a weird experience because it's so clean. You can actually see, like, the ink lines and some of the paint lines in the cells. So, I don't know, sometimes I like watching standard def for that little blur, line blur, so you don't pick these things up. So I think with older animation, it's certainly not something you want to see in high def, kind of like the Koreans and the Japanese with the HD porn. You know, there's some things you don't want to see that clear.
But some things look amazing, like anything from Pixar out now. If you just walk into Best Buy and see the demos, it's just like jaw-dropping.
Well, I'm so bummed with Pixar, because I understand that their more recent releases are the ones that look better, like in HD. So you've got Cars out on Blu-ray and Ratatouille up. Yeah. But, you know, no Incredibles on Blu-ray, no Toy Story on Blu-ray. So until they reach a little back into their catalog, I'm not going to be picking up another from Pixar in a while. But, you know, Pirates Trilogy on Blu-ray, wicked jazz to go pick that up. And rumors about The Matrix coming out on Blu-ray, that makes me excited. Although, it should come with a rebate coupon if you want to send in your copy of the third movie. You should be able to get your money back for that one.
I want to be able to just trade out my HD DVD set here. Silly me. Oh, well.
I know you're getting to that in a moment, but there's been some rumors around the net that Circuit City's doing a very hush-hush in-house deal where if you go in, it's totally unadvertised, you're going to go in and speak to a manager, and if you had bought an HD player from Circuit City, you can exchange it and pay the difference for a Blu-ray player.
Yes. And I think Best Buy is actually doing an open thing. They're just openly allowing consumers to trade in their players and movies. And yeah, we're going to get to that later in the show here. It's pretty interesting stuff.
But yeah, you know, there are some movies I'm interested in seeing. But, you know, the thing I've been saying for a while, if you were even contemplating Blu-ray during the HD format wars, that for $400 for a Blu-ray player, I mean, you really can't beat that.
Yeah, a Blu-ray player that happens to be a gaming console.
Right. And another thing you'll be getting to in a moment is it's also like future perfect to an extent, I'm sure. But I mean, there's firmware updates to make sure that you get the latest and greatest, which no standalone player can offer you.
Yeah, not really. I mean, there's just a handful of them, and many of them featuring the new Blu-ray profile. You're just kind of hard-pressed. If you've already got a standalone player, chances are it's not compatible with the new Profile 2.0 playback method. So let's just dive into this. We're talking about PS3 here. If you are a PS3 owner, by the time you hear this show, you probably already have the new firmware update, version 2.20, which will add Blu-ray Live support. Now, what that is, it allows for content such as bonus scenes, ringtones, extra subtitles. Of course, we already have the ability to do picture-in-picture from the last firmware update. You'll be able to do interactive movie-based games to communicate over the internet, effectively adding online multiplayer support. Other things found in the firmware update, resume play. This is huge. Enabling your PS3 to start playing a Blu-ray disc or a standard DVD video at the point it was stopped, even if the disc has been removed. Nice. Cool stuff. The new internet browser for the PS3 will be enhanced. Video files directly linked from a web page will be able to be streamed, and the browser's view speed will be improved. That's some of the big things there. Oh, and if you have a PSP, audio output device is a new setting for remote play, enabling your PSP to serve as a remote control for music played through your PS3.
Now, unfortunately, that's for the newer, slimmer PSPs only, right?
Not 100% sure. I think so. I think you do have to have the PSP Slims to do remote play.
I have the first generation PSP, but it played God of War just fine.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful game, and you already beat it, right? Only after, what, a week or two?
Three times, same week.
I just suck as a game player. I can't get past the first boss.
Well, the really cool thing about the PSP, no matter what version you have, is that you can download game saves, so maybe we'll have to hook up a name later on. I'll pass a file to you.
Yay! That'd be awesome! Studios are starting to make new movies on Blu-ray featuring the Blu-ray Live feature. Few compatible players won't be striking until summertime, although the PS3 will be the first and best choice of the device for Blu-ray playback. Getting to enjoy these new features months before another player even comes out, that's pretty darn good. And again, $400 for your PS3 right now.
Now, I'm gonna like really open up an ass whooping on myself and probably generate a lot of hate mail through the podcast, but I've got to say, when it comes to the comparison now between Xbox Live and PlayStation PSN, I'm kind of leaning towards the PSN side of things.
Really?
Well, I mean, I like free. Not that Microsoft doesn't offer free, but Microsoft's just so damn greedy. They want money for everything.
That's true. I've noticed a similarity, though. I mean, the PSN does offer free demos, free trailers, but there's some stuff that costs, too. A lot of exclusive games, just like on Xbox Live, their exclusive games cost money. But Xbox just offers a lot more content, at least right now.
Right. But I think you're going to see things change, especially because, you know, there was that rumor initially that Microsoft was in talks with Sony to integrate Blu-ray to the next generation Xbox systems. And, you know, that was proven to be pretty bogus. So, I don't know. Again, with the format war over, with the PS3 at $400 now, and who knows, you know, could come out with a cheaper, more economical version just to get them into homes. I mean, let's face it, that's what kind of made the PS2 take off. It was a cheap DVD player. So now you have the same situation where you have the PS3 as a cheap Blu-ray player. I think it's just a matter of time before the playing field levels out and, heck, you know, even tips into Sony's favor.
And I guess an ironic thing is many PS3 owners don't even know or care about the Blu-ray playback feature.
I really love the Christmas ad where, you know, where it said, a Blu-ray player, and it also plays games, and that's kind of what sold me from day one. It's like, right now I'm more interested in the Blu-ray than playing games, and I'm sure that'll change. But, you know, it creates a lot of tough situations with people like you and I who have the 360 and the PS3, because I remember calling you and telling you that I got Call of Duty for the PS3, and you said you had it for the Xbox, and it's like, you know, shit, you gotta, like, talk to everybody on your buddy list on both systems to see who has what, and then kind of narrow down your odds of playing against certain games with certain people, and keep that in mind when you go out and buy a game.
I kind of went with, I've got more people on the buddy list on Xbox Live, so that's usually my determining factor, and it's like, well, get the Xbox version or the PS3 version. Plus, reviews also count, too. When you've got a game that's ported on both consoles, 9 times out of 10, they'll say graphically they're pretty much the same, or sometimes the PS3 version is buggier for some reason.
Yeah, and I think the only exception in recent history has been with Devil May Cry 4, where a lot of the reviews have said, yeah, it did look a bit crisper and sharper with the PS3.
Yep, and I chose to buy it on the PS3 because of that auto-install feature to bypass all the load times.
And naturally, at the time, I didn't have the PS3, so I have it for the 360.
And it's a solo play game anyway. You can't play your buddies.
So I guess what it comes down to, at least in the near future, is whatever exclusives are coming out on the consoles.
Like, Metal Gear Solid for PS3?
Mm-hmm. Because GTA is not, it's not an exclusive, and there's not going to be exclusive online play. You know, both Sony and Microsoft have been very clear about that. People still insist about some exclusivity, but no, both systems are going to have the same exact online play features.
Now, if you're an owner of HD DVD, I've got a little breakdown here, courtesy of Engadget, for Best Buy. So Circuit City was kind of hush-hush saying, yeah, we'll give you credit towards a Blu-ray player. Just go ahead and bring your player back. Best Buy is kind of openly doing this. Now, they offer the most trade-in credit for the combo players, like the BH200. They'll give you nearly $300 for that one. But if you want to trade in your Xbox 360 add-on drive, you'll get a measly $21 in trade-in credit, because right now you buy it brand new for $50. So there you go. If you want to trade in your movies, they will not take them by themselves. You have to trade in a player or the drive, and even then, you're only credited $3 a piece. So my recommendation, go ahead and hold on to it.
Wow, I had no idea they had dropped the price of the HD player so low, and for somebody like me, frugal and economical, I'm almost tempted to pick one up and some movies, because, God, you know, they're on the cheap, too. So, you know, for a $100 investment, you could probably get a pretty substantial library.
I think so. And I think for anyone who's interested in the high-def market, especially now that HD DVD is a dead format, there's still, it's beautiful quality. And if you go for Paramount or Universal titles, those are the two studios that were the absolute last to turn to Blu-ray with the format war. I think you can make out with some good stuff. You like pick up Transformers or Serenity, or there's just a lot of good stuff on from both studios, only on HD at this time.
Yeah, you know, I read a really interesting article last week, and unfortunately I don't remember who to attribute it to, but they were talking about how Blu-ray won, but really, you know, not only was it a really bumpy road to get there, but there's a lot of hurdles in the future, and one being that a lot of the studios who are late adapters to Blu-ray, the Blu-ray camp is more interested in getting the more recent films out and not going back and re-releasing not only the older films in libraries, but especially those that were done in HD. So it can be some time before we see a lot of these HD movies coming out on Blu-ray. Now, of course, there's a few exceptions with some of the big blockbusters, and we talked about Matrix, but overall, it's going to take a long time for a lot of that HD catalog to convert over to Blu-ray. So again, to go out and pick up these movies, you know, literally some of them brand new, still in the cellophane, going for $3, places like Amazon and eBay, you can make out pretty good.
I struggled with that for a while. It's like, do I sell them? Do I dump them? Would I get anything worth it? And I kind of polled people on LiveJournal and MySpace and said, nah, dude, just hold on to it. You enjoy the format. Your player works fine. You know, until it craps out, then enjoy it for what it's worth.
Right, and maybe by the time that Microsoft does release the next version of the Xbox, who knows, maybe it will be Blu-ray integrated.
This is big news in the anime world. Studio Gonzo, in an answer to the booming piracy issue facing anime of late, they have just announced it will be streaming its new titles worldwide on the same day as its broadcast in Japan. The video streams will have Japanese audio and English subtitles, starting with The Tower of Druaga and Blast Rider. They're both debuting this month. The shows will stream through YouTube, Crunchyroll, and BOST online services. Their press release also mentions fee-based download of high-resolution movie files. This is the first global simultaneous streaming of multiple series from a major anime studio. GDH, who owns Gonzo, says this is, quote, an effort to offer equal accessibility and new viewing opportunities to fans around the world, while at the same time showcasing a legal online alternative to illegal file sharing and downloading, unquote. GDH also emphasized that these services are for foreign viewers only. The company already has deals in place to stream its content through services within Japan. So, huge news, especially on the heels of the booming discussions online about piracy, especially, plug, go back to episode 77, our entire listener feedback episode, asking what are our listeners' opinions about the state of the anime industry.
It's pretty badass coming from Gonzo leading the charge here, because they do have some pretty kick-ass properties.
Some interesting things have been going on with the online service Crunchyroll of late. They just got, what, millions of dollars in capital funding, which has people kind of shaking in their boots going, wait a minute, there's a lot of illegal content on that site.
Yeah, it was amazing. I believe I read it over on Anime News Network about how, you know, Crunchy got $4.2 million. They said, yeah, a studio like Funimation or ADV or somebody could take them to court over the copyright infringements, but with, you know, $4 million to bankroll the lawsuits, it puts them in a much more difficult position to go after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Funimation has been in talks with Crunchyroll to kind of police the content and everything, and it's just kind of been up there sort of in the ether. People wondering, it's like, all right, well, how seriously is Crunchyroll going to take this? Are they going to crack down, or are they just going to just rest on their laurels? Like, oh, we got money to burn. We're okay.
Yeah, and I just think it's really wild that people would put that much money behind a company that they, you know and it's been very clear is profiting from illegal activities.
But I tell you, and if you go back, this has been my opinion for a while, it's like, when will the Japanese studio get the content out there at least the week that it's broadcast in Japan with official subtitles? And here we are, Studio Gonzo doing just that, except it's the day that it's broadcast in Japan. So, and with legal official subtitles and file sharing and streaming, and the studios are totally fine with it.
Yeah, and again, this is what I think is going to be the big breakthrough in Japan, because it's coming from a big studio. It's a reputable studio, you know. If it was coming from a more minor corporation, people would probably wait and test the waters and see how things go. But if Gonzo's willing to do it, I think you're going to see a lot of the other big studios follow suit rather quickly.
And everyone knows when you stream something, it's not the best quality, but it is watchable. You watch stuff on YouTube, it's probably like the number one or number two most popular site on the internet. And the quality's pretty horrible, but it's watchable though.
And I'm sure it's going to be ad-supported, and you know what? I have no problems with that, because you get to stay current, and yeah, it's definitely going to kill your interest in going after torrents or whatever, because as elitist as the otaku are, the subtitling is actually atrocious, you know, when you compare it to what they're really saying. I know a lot of people have a hard time with a lot of the U.S. dubbing studios and their subtitles or their interpretations, but I'm telling you, at least, you know, coming from an official source, you're going to have a pretty damn good idea of what these characters are actually saying.
And if you're going to argue with the official subtitles, I mean, it's coming from the studio that's giving you the show for free and legally. So it's like, that should kill the argument dead in the water.
Right.
So I think this is great. And I think, I hope at least other studios will kind of follow this model. And I know it's kind of similar to what's happening in the music industry, in particular Trent Reznor with his new instrumental album that came out of nowhere, and he's distributing it online himself with this new business model where, you know, you can sample a few tracks for free, or you can donate with a PayPal link and get the album and all that. And kind of, I guess you're kind of following that model with Perimeter of the Void.
We are, exactly. Reznor's announcement a couple weeks ago was probably one of the biggest turning points in music history. You collectively heard everybody in the industry's head snap when they went, what the hell did he just do? Because not only did he release, you know, what is it, like a 32-track album, available in all kinds of formats, the limited edition vinyl pressings, 2,500 of them that were going for $300 a piece, those sold out instantly. So, I mean, the fans definitely appreciate the new music model, and that's something that we definitely embrace, to be able to get it to people, again, DRM-free, high-quality MP3 formats, and have the opportunity to also have the tangible CD for people who don't have the portable MP devices. You can go ahead and just pop it in your car. Thanks, Trent. Sorry to go off on a tirade there, but yeah, he's the one who really forced us into that direction.
No, this is huge. You know, 2008, it's going to go down, I think, in history as a big turning point for the music industry, for the anime industry. And we'll see if anything happens with Hollywood, but who knows? I mean, big things are going on.
What's really wild is that even though they both have to go into the same type of business model, the record industry is going to collapse because of it, because the artists are able to do these things totally independent of a label. And that's really awesome. Totally, two thumbs up for that. Now, on the anime side, you're always going to have the anime studios, otherwise you don't have a product. But I think for them, if they embrace it and do it the right way, like Gonzo's doing, I think you might actually see a resurgence in anime's popularity.
That's right. And of course, any of our story elements here that we report on the podcast is open for debate, comments, questions, suggestions. If you have a viewpoint, please share it with us. And especially if you've got a microphone handy and you could record an MP3 of your opinions, send it to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. We'll credit you. We'll play your MP3 if we can, if it fits in and everything. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this story or any of them. Now, as we come to a close for this particular episode, we dive into the random category. We've got a top 10 list here. 10 outrageously awesome film deaths. Now, we all love movies, right? It's hard to find someone who doesn't like movies. There's obviously a lot of death because some film deaths obviously make film history. And this is some of the more outrageous ones, starting with number 10, John Hurt in 1979's Alien. The method of death, an alien burst from his stomach, although I argue it comes from his chest. But anyway, the factor to consider, possibly the first male to ever give birth on screen. Arnold Schwarzenegger was second. Why this is awesome. Still remains one of the most awesome death scenes ever. I totally agree.
That's what I. Number 9, John Voight in Anaconda. Method of death, eaten by a snake. Factor to consider. He spit back up and then re-eaten by the snake. And why this is awesome. After being regurgitated, he manages to wink at Jennifer Lopez before getting swallowed whole again.
That's pretty outrageous. I wouldn't say it's awesome, but it's outrageous. Number 8. Here's a film I haven't seen. Showdown in Little Tokyo. Kerry Horiyuki Tagawa, whose method of death was being blown up. Factor to consider, after a sword fight with Dolph Lundgren, he's thrown onto a spinning wheel that just explodes for some reason. Why this is awesome? It makes absolutely no sense, but it rules.
Oh, number 7, Paul McCrane from Robocop. Method of death, roadkill. Factor to consider, before getting hit, he crashes his truck into a vat of toxic waste. He emerges from the collision, a melting and disfigured mutant. He is promptly splattered by Clarence Boddicker's car. Why this is awesome. Subtlety is not one of Robocop's strong points.
Number 6, Vincent Craig Dupree from Jason Takes Manhattan, one of the endless Friday the 13th sequels. Method of death, decapitation. Factor to consider. His head is punched clean off his neck while attempting to box with Jason Voorhees on a rooftop. At least he went down swinging. Why this is awesome. The force from Jason's punch is so powerful that Vincent's head lands in a street-level dumpster, causing the lid to close behind it.
I vividly remember that. It's horrible. Number 5, Art Malik, True Lies. Method of death. While standing on an airborne jet, Art falls off to the side and is caught on a missile. He and the rocket are promptly fired through a building into a helicopter. Fact to consider. Missile was armed by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Why this is awesome. The sheer adrenaline from this alone would be worth the ride.
I got a picture here on the page, too. It says, admit it, this looks fun. It's like, yeah, best amusement park ride ever.
Until it's time to get off.
Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger gets a lot of movies on this list. Let's go to number 4 here, Total Recall. But actually, the death goes to Ronnie Cox. Method of death, suffocates. Factor to consider, suffocation taking place on Mars. Arnold Schwarzenegger also has a hand in this. Why, this is awesome. Easily the second best dying facial expression ever. His eyes are like bugging out and he's literally going, blah! It's awesome.
One of those moments in the movies where admittedly I have to turn away because it's just a very disturbing image. Oh, and this is an equally disturbing image, if not more. Number 3 is Johnny Depp in A Nightmare on Elm Street. Method of death, eaten by bed. Fact to consider. It's Johnny Depp. He had it coming.
Yeah, say no more, man. I mean, a lot of people didn't know Johnny Depp started with A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Why it is awesome, unfortunately, is a visual with a before and after shot of the late, great Johnny Depp.
Yeah, basically he's being sucked into the bed, if you'll recall, from the first Elm Street, and suddenly a huge pool of blood sprays up onto the ceiling from the bed where he was. Now, number two, this is a classic, a film that I think was far ahead of its time and deserves a look by all geeks everywhere. Big Trouble in Little China. The actor is Carter Wong. Method of death, spontaneous combustion. The factor to consider. Have you ever been so angry you couldn't control your own actions? If so, multiply that by 1,000 to get an idea of how upset Carter Wong was in Big Trouble in Little China. After his boss is killed by Kurt Russell, he flips out so hard that his head fills with steam and he explodes. Why this is awesome. Best dying facial expression ever.
And the number one outrageous, awesome film death goes to Slim Pickens in Doctor Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Method of death. Rides a nuclear warhead right into Soviet Russia. Factors to consider. If the USSR is attacked, it starts a doomsday device that will blow up the world. And why this is awesome. Not only would riding a nuclear warhead be the ultimate rush, Slim Pickens manages to single-handedly tip first domino to start a chain reaction leading to global destruction. In other words, he takes every person on the planet with him. That's quite a way to go.
And that concludes our top 10 list for the Big Ball Broadcast. Woo!
And I guess that was technically kind of lampooned at the end of Independence Day.
True that. But the superior of the films by far is Dr. Strangelove.
Yes, quite unique to say the least.
Definitely. Okay, well, we are fresh out of content, and again, it'll be a while before we post another show, so apologies for that. But in the meantime, you are welcome to peruse previous episodes on our Blogspot page. Listen to the end credits. Maria will tell you all about that and the various ways to get in touch with our show, and we encourage you to do so. Until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigballbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky.
That was totally weird.